Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, good.
Nice hearing the mom to be wonderful.
So we didn't plan this, but my first poem is also a little bit about Bangladesh and a little bit about the United States. You will notice throughout the evening that my poetry does lurch back and forth between Bangladesh and Asia and Pittsburgh and other parts of the world. When words are a little bit too complicated in terms of referring to either Islamic or Hindu mythology, I'll explain them ahead of time. Even though normally I just like to let the poems speak for themselves. A few years ago, I saw some Bengali fishermen building a nauka, which is the Bengali word for boat, on Narsingdi Ghat. And it reminded me of an incident a couple of decades earlier when I had seen a former colleague of mine having a yacht built for himself, and we watched it being built through the camera on his work computer. Very different men, very different boats, but there was a passion between them. The boatmaker's art. I watched the boat as it was built, the shine of wood, the decadent lines of it, hand-polished surfaces gleaming, sleek, tempting, half done and up on trestles, looking for all the world as if it wanted to leap into the water, sails unfurled, bows springing above the waves, stern slicing through sprays of spume. The boatmaker's hands gentle, sanding the sides. Unaware of the camera's gaze, voyeurs peeping through lenses, trained on his hands, he worked while we watched, absorbed and unconcerned, secure in his place as master builder, a yacht with sails, no fiberglass, no engine. I imagine Galatea being chiseled with that precision, the maker chipping at her perfect form, fusing design to desire. Two, on the Ganges Delta, crisscrossed by rivers, fishermen abandoned wooden sailing boats and dugouts, designs over 3,000 years old. In Narsingdi Ghat, boat builders stand ankle deep in mud, lungis hitched up around their hips, building power boats and motorized dinghies using traditional tools, hammers, nail, chisel, wood planer, bow saw, lathe, and mass-produced engines, cheap, efficient, the fire of focus in their eyes. Their hands gentle, the hull bending to their touch. These boats are both love and livelihood. They are to fish, to eat, to live, to race. Not to be confused with Bangladesh's shipbuilding industry in the dockyards at Buriganga or Chittagong, vying with China, Japan, and South Korea to export ocean-going vessels and warships. Back to prehistoric preeminence. In 1770, Bengal built 223,250 tons of ocean-going ships, compared to just 23,000 in the rest of the American colonies. We'll get there back. Three, Damachi, boatman, launches his finished nauka, beating back thick fronds of lotus leaves clustering the edges with his long pole. Slicing through pink blossoms, the boat glides into the river. Put, put of the engine starts, black fumes trailing behind. Nets cast into the deep of the inlet, marked by buoys. He will return before dawn the next day to harvest his catch. Four. The Apache Star, a fiberglass monstrosity, dove into the water like a red rocket. Engines roaring, achieved speeds of 115 knots, set a world record from Miami to Havana and back. Five, Charon lifts up his oar, pushes off from the edge. The ripple of black water makes no sound. I make lists obsessively, so obviously I had to read one list more at least. This particular poem is after Wisława Szymborska's Possibility. Lists again. I prefer bharta to biryani, white wine to red, and most of all, a place in the shade to sit, eat, and if I'm lucky, read. A murder mystery with a lady detective, a romance with a feisty heroine, poetry, not diatribe, and a blue ink pen to underline the words I like or love or don't know. A yellow pad to jot down thoughts, words to borrow or steal, a glimpse into another life. I make lists of things to do, cross them off when I succeed. If I've done something not on my list, I add it so I can cross it off. If that's cheating, so be it. I wish I were Catholic, so I could just go and confess my list of sins to some unseen priest who would forgive me in a grave voice and send me back into the world innocent and absolved. Getting right back to Pittsburgh, I'm very bad at giving directions. Giving directions. A visitor asks for directions to Murdoch Farms. She wants to see the fancy homes. I can't remember the way, so I say, go straight and make a right at Rite Aid, all the way up Whiteman Street towards Forbes. Past the large white house where 30 years ago, a teenage girl was pierced to death by a katana at 3 a.m., having let in her drug-addled friend by disabling the security system. The neighbors heard her cries, but no one came to help. I was at a party when I heard the news, tremors. I couldn't sleep all night that night. Imagine the surgeon father trying to resuscitate his broken child, the wild-haired mother who couldn't even scream. Be sure to make that right before you reach Forbes. That's the place you want. The fanciest homes you ever saw. And as I warned you, all my poems are lurching back and forth, and August is no different. Then, when the black nightingale returns to the forest, when the audacious sun is high, I wonder beneath the waves where a few more wind beats would have taken me. When autumn is almost upon us and the wheat is high, apples turn red among the green and golden leaves, my heart unwinding begins its slow descent into the lion's mouth, forgetting the unchangeable past, the years that turn and turn, implacable, the wheel of fortune oiled and relentless, takes me again to the Blue Slide Park, still echoing with my children's high laughs, a kestrel bouncing off the horizon, azimuth, azimuth, alpha and omega. This next poem is also about a river. And I refer here to Rudra, the Hindu god of wind and storm, and Draupadi, who is a heroine in the great Hindu epic, the Mahabharata. She is in one scene, she's captured by an evil king who, in order to shame her, attempts to have her undressed in public, but she's wearing a sari, which is 6 yards of material which you wrap. I would have worn one tonight, but I didn't want to spend the whole evening thinking about not having it fall off of me. So, you know, I do wear it sometimes. But a miracle saves her because the sari continues endlessly. River at night. Even at night, the river uncoils from its source like smoke, like stone, a song unfolding from first notes. How to name this flow which has no form, no definition, this promise of continuous change, always the same? Can we believe what we perceive? Is this a mirage, ignis fatuus, the way Rudra, the rough god, declares the wild heart admits no word, the way incense curls upward, delicate, ephemeral, a tenuous link between temporal things and divinity, the way Draupadi sari unfurls, unfolding endlessly, a river of silk uncoiling. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about aging, so this poem is called Little Old Ladies with Silver Hair. I've joined their ranks. These days, when I board a plane, young men offer to help before I even have a chance to look helpless. When I ride the subway, young women jump up to give me a seat. Once so pregnant, she looked ready to pop. These days, when I feel a twinge, it's not Vronsky's well-earned pleasure at muscle ache after vigorous workout. More like moderate acromial clavicular arthrosis or the mild glenohumeral kind. These days, I wonder, should I learn to play mahjong, bridge, bingo, take one last painful swing at golf? If this is all there was to be, the smoke and mirrors of a life well-lived, a faithful and devoted husband, two loving and successful children, mortgages paid off, dinners out with friends. Was there a turn I missed? A place I could have said, this way and I go thusly, that and somewhere else? Should I write a zuihitsu? Or is that inappropriate expropriation of someone else's culture? Should I add odd symbols to my words, throw in random, that is to say's, abandon punctuation altogether? Should I shape my stanzas into obelisks or turds, mimic MFA symptoms beloved of editors? Or is that a youth disease? Perhaps just tell me what I know. The baobab tree's roots rise from dusty soil, black branches break the sky like dark lightning, and on the path below, the rattle of beggars shaking tin cans, hijabi women scuttle home before the storm. I have seen the crumbling bricks of the house where I was born, the balcony with the rusted railing, on the street with tea shops, like the one my great uncle ran, where my three-year-old self danced and begged for sips of the sweet syrup. I have seen the field where my father spoke to crowds of tens of thousands, my four-year-old self in a blue silk garara hid behind the speaker's podium. I have seen the river run amok with monsoon rain, spill on the mud line of the banks, the gray water froths, roils. In their depths, the reflection of my mother as a young girl standing on the Noka's prow, not saying goodbye to her friend, knee deep in water among the lotus blooms. If there were a way of returning to that beginning, would I go back? Or stand here in the checkout line at Costco, wondering, should I go back for the dried shiitake mushrooms? I'm going to end with two short love poems because no reading is complete without a love poem. And the Balam Kali, by the way, is a boat race in Kerala, India, where the boats have to be in the shape of snakes. Dialogue. I cannot say it will be different this time, that the yearning of clouds to be rain will fail, the singed leaves will float up to meet the sky as if better things were happening up there, where we cannot see threads plundered from the sky, ours uncoiling. The stars continue to burn, explode into darkness. The Valam Kali unwinds again. Snake boats race against the river's ripples and on the shore, ankle deep in mud and lotus. Each side cheers on its champions. Love, you have gone where I cannot follow. I listen to the drip of water on stone. And this last one is called Insomnia in the City. Unless the moon in Sagittarius comes clean, confesses to the murder of sleep, unless the windless whisper of leaves grieves for summers wasted on the street, unless the memory of breeze is something we can keep, unless we sense the drift of last year's sunsets creep into the day, unless the things we dream begin to breathe, Pinocchio in Geppetto's hands. Unless words come in the night like a gift from the past, which fades in sunlight slowly until the shadow of its shape is all that's left. You will not come home again, and I will count the stars instead of sheep.